Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
On DAB Digital Radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, after the lights go out, on TalkSport.
I'm Steve Harmison. I represented England in 63 tests and 58 one-day internationals and won the Ashes twice with my country.
And I'm Leon McKenzie. I've experienced life as both a Premier League footballer and professional boxer. In this series, we focus on elite athletes and their transition from their sporting careers to civilian life, and the struggles which have followed.
Both Leon and I have experienced our own issues dealing with day-to-day life since departing the sporting arena. And during this series, we're speaking with several sports personalities who've experienced similar battles following their careers in elite sport. Tonight on TalkSport, we're in conversation with the former Wigan, Manchester United, Olympiacos and Northern Ireland goalkeeper, Roy Carroll.
Novakovic off the bench, up against Roy Carroll.
In for Dembele, the knockdown, what a save from Roy Carroll.
Great save, real chance, another brilliant save. Roy Carroll is outstanding.
During a professional football career stretching over a quarter of a century, Roy Carroll represented several clubs including Wigan Athletic, Manchester United, West Ham, Derby County, Olympiacos and Notts County. Numerous major honours came his way, including Premier League and FA Cup winners' medals during his time at Old Trafford, a Greek Super League title and two Greek Cups with Olympiacos, and the Irish League title on two occasions during the latter years of his career with Linfield. On the international stage, he won 45 caps for Northern Ireland and was a member of the squad which competed at Euro 2016 in France.
We'll be joined by Roy in a moment. What are you expecting from tonight's interview, Steve?
Honesty. A guy who's played probably double the length of a decent footballing career, who had his demons with, obviously, alcohol. That's the topic of conversation tonight.
And mental health issues.
Mental health issues, but I think the alcohol will stand out. I'm also looking forward to hearing how he was able to recover and go on to have several successful years playing before he retired and his current life working as a goalkeeping coach. You've also got to remember he played with some of the biggest names, particularly during the 4 years with Manchester United. So it's going to be fascinating to hear Roy talk about his experiences playing alongside some of these personalities.
After the lights go out on Talk Sport.
Let's give a big welcome to tonight's guest on After the Lights Go Out here on Talk Sport. It's a very good evening to Mr. Roy Carroll.
Good evening, Roy.
Hey, guys.
Roy, first off, there's a little bit of bouffon about you because of, you know, the same age. You're also made of the same stuff. You just recently played in an Irish championship match, which you said was going to be your last. How does it feel to be finally finished with playing?
I tell you what, talking about Buffon, one of the best keepers in the world, I think he's still playing at a high level in Italy. So for me personally, I came back to play for Ballymallard, my first team in Northern Ireland when I was growing up. It was the opportunity to play for them because they had no keepers. I couldn't let them down. They had no keepers. So I decided to play the game and it lasted 35 minutes and I was upset with a pulled hamstring and we lost the game as well. But coming back to play at 45 years old, it was very strange. Had a couple of sessions with them, goalkeeping sessions, a couple of training sessions with them, and feeling good coming up to the game, feeling good playing the game. And I made that one mistake when I would tell my young goalkeepers, make sure you hold on to the ball when a shot comes in, and I decided to parry it and I had to get up for the second shot and try to push off, and I pulled my hamstring, and that was the end of my Ballymallard days. And after the game I said, that's me finished now playing football.
I know what it's like to pull a hamstring or two because I've pulled my hamstring so many times.
Yeah, but you're an Ophi player. I'm a goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's but this is what's interesting, Roy, right? Because you're a goalkeeper and you're pulling your hamstring. Do you think that because of the sort of ages that you were getting to, did you notice your body sort of starting to slow down? Because obviously strikers are more explosive than that, right? As we've...
you're a lot quicker than goalkeepers, but I played in a high level in the Irish League with Linfield till I was 40 years old. And even then, I felt my body, I ruptured my ACL. I'd done my other knee the year before, so my body was giving up. And I decided to become a goalkeeping coach. Came back to play for Dungannon for 3 months as well. But when you're 45 years old, you think you can do it at that age. But trust me, it's difficult. And I do put my hands up. Buffon still playing a high level in Italy. Fantastic on him, like, to keep doing it.
Prior to that, Roy, you've had a nine-month spell out of the game in 2011. You know, when you were without a club, you must have wondered if your career as a professional footballer was over at that sort of point in time. As it's fair to say, was that a tough period of your life?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff happening off the pitch for me through them 9 months. Not even them 9 months, it was building up to them 9 months. I had a bad injury, had a back problem, had to get an operation on it. Missed about 10 months of my career playing for West Ham. And things off the field happened, a lot of drinking, depression took over. And it was very difficult. I thought that was the end of me. And I woke up one morning in an apartment in Canary Wharf, where I was renting. And I had a few people there, didn't even know who was there. And I was drinking quite heavily the night before. And I looked in the mirror and just realised, what am I doing? Something looked back at me and didn't realise who I was. And something just clicked in my head. And from then on in, I never touched a drop of drink. And it was about 12 years now, 11 years, 12 years. I've been off the drink. And it was the hardest, the darkest times of my life not playing football. Because when you're a young lad, you just want to be a professional footballer. And I had that opportunity when I came to England. And no one told me anything about when I'm out injured, how can I accept being injured for 9 or 10 months? All I was brought up was play, train, and that was taken away from me. It was difficult. I was a bit selfish because there's a lot of other players that never come back to play football, but you don't realise that at the time. So it was very dark days for me, them days.
Yeah, Roy, you mentioned in 2011, the dark days. You made your debut in, I think, 95 at Hull, and that's probably somebody's full career. Would you say 15, 16 years that goes with that? Did you have any plans on what you're going to do after football? Or did you make any plans during that time to think, right, what am I going to do after football? Because it sounds like in, obviously, 2011, the darkest time, you went into rehab. Did you go in under a false name as well?
Yeah, let me clear this up. It was 2007 when it was really serious. I came back in 2011. That's when I got my life back on track. So it was over a four-year period when I was drinking very, very heavy and a lot of depression I had going through, thinking of bad things. So I went to rehab. Yes, I put myself in a rehab, but that was through my wife and through my agent. It wasn't through me because I thought there was nothing wrong with me, as most people who drinks quite heavily think there's nothing wrong with them. And I went in rehab for 6 days and just thought, no, I'm getting out of here. This is not for me. I think it was about 2 years later, that's when I realised. That's when I woke up and knew there was a big problem with me. And I fought it. I fell out with my wife, moved away from the family home. And lucky enough, my wife stood by me when I came back on my hands and knees, begging to come back home. And 2011, moved to Greece. And that's what changed my life around, moving away from the UK, my wife and my kids.
To touch on the rehab stuff, you said it was 2 years. Do you think the rehab worked for you, even though you said you didn't feel as though it did at the time? Do you think now, on looking back on it, that it did work for you?
I look back on it now and say everything what I've went through, yes, every single thing I've done, even the rehab, it did help me. But not at the time, because at the time I left, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. 6 days in rehab, yes, it probably did help me when I look back now. But see, after them 6 days, I think it was back on the drink after 2 days. And my head was telling me there was nothing wrong with me. But my family, my wife was telling me every weekend, Roy, you need to stop. But I didn't listen to her until it was too late. And lucky enough, I wasn't that far gone, like, to do something harmful to myself. But I knew something was going to help me by drinking too much. And I'd probably end up not waking up one morning with drinking too much alcohol in my system.
You know, you mentioned depression previously, which is something I'm familiar with, and I know Steve is as well. Where do you feel like these triggers really started from you? Is it because football was sort of maybe coming to an end, or is there other sort of deeper things involved with maybe the triggers as such of why, you know, you fell into maybe addiction of alcohol?
Like I said before, the trigger probably for me looking back now was the injury I had. I had a really bad back injury. I had to get an operation. West Ham would put me on the pitch with an injection on a Saturday morning. Never trained during the week because my back was that serious. I couldn't train during the week. And I was playing games and couldn't get up on a Sunday morning. Couldn't get out of bed on Sunday morning. And then I went to see a specialist myself. And he said, "You're a very lucky person, Roy. You could have had a problem. I had a shooting nerve pain going down my left leg. You could have had that foot drop where you have no feeling in your left foot. You've been dragging your foot." So I think that triggered everything in my life, especially the depression, because for me personally, this is my opinion, when I was going through depression, was everything was bad. I was thinking of all the bad things. Like, I'm never going to come back. I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to be a footballer again. Never going to be a goalkeeper. And I'm not going to be able to do this. My small kids are so young. I was worried about my back, and I just started drinking even heavier. I always had a drink growing up. Always liked to have a drink, but this was getting out of hand. Like, I started off really bad binge drinking at weekends. And then I remember moving to Denmark, playing in Denmark, and I would have went training in the morning, came back, got four bottles of red wine, go home, lock the doors, close the curtains, and just lock myself in the apartment, and then come back training the next day, big smile on my face, everything's brilliant. And done the same thing over and over and over. So I was in a routine, a very bad routine, and I couldn't get out. And I came back home. I thought I'd get a club back in England. Couldn't get a club for 9 months. That trigger was definitely probably the injury what stopped me from training and playing football, what I always loved.
Would you say that during that 9 months that you was out for the Rangers?
No, I was still at West Ham.
You still at West Ham?
I was still at West Ham when things were really, really serious.
Right.
Went to Rangers. It was still 6 months up there, and I was drinking heavily as well. My wife stayed in London, moved to Derby County for a year and a half, and it was them 4 years what was really, really bad. And then when I came home, that's when I had nothing for until August. So I came home in December, and then until the following August came, I had nothing, had no football, had nothing. So I fell out with my wife, left the kids and my wife, and I didn't care about anybody. I was just more worried about where my next drink was coming.
Where did you fear your life was going then, Roy?
Nowhere, Steve. Nowhere, mate. I had nothing in my head what I was doing. I would have went any bars in London, anywhere I would have went to get drink. Didn't care how bad it was. And I was definitely in a bad place. Like, looking back now, I feel ashamed of myself, but I'm a strong person now, and that's why I'm talking to you today. And I talk about a lot about mental health and depression and alcohol. People think, come on out, have a drink, you'll be okay. No, alcohol makes it worse.
Roy, we spoke a moment ago about your descent into alcoholism. Tell us how you managed to turn your life around and break with the routine of drinking alcohol.
Steve, this was a phone call from a Greek agent. That's what helped me got away from from where I was to move the other side of Europe to play in Greece. And my wife and my family was with me. Okay. And that's what helped me. I had my wife and my two kids came out to Greece before. I never had my wife up in Glasgow or Derby or Denmark. I was by myself, but I did have my teammates, but they were my teammates at training ground. But afterwards, I was locked myself away. So for me, it was always my wife and that phone call from Greece. I was a very lucky person. I got that opportunity to move away and play football, what I always loved, like I always say, and I always will do. It's in my blood. And to move away and move to Crete, where people didn't know me as much as people did in the UK, I opened up more in Greece, spoke to my teammates, and I had teammates there who never drank as well, so I was in good company, and it was a different culture as well.
So it sounds like the surroundings were really important in terms of your actual surroundings. You going into a different country where the culture is a little bit different in terms of the drinking. It sounds like it maybe helped a little bit.
I think it helped me a lot because I don't know if I would have been strong enough to stay off it if I stayed in the UK. I'm a very addictive person, but when I moved to Greece, it just felt like home. Me and my wife and my kids, and moved to this place called Crete, an island in Greece. And the fans loved me out there, and the people. I was only there for 6 months, and I got the opportunity to go to Olympiacos, which was another story. But I did think that did help me to move away from the culture what I was in. I escaped it. There's a lot of people out there who can't have that opportunity. It's difficult for a lot of people in the UK to just pick up and move. But I do talk a lot about my problems, what I had. And I still do have problems. I don't hide the fact I do still have problems. That's why I came back to play for Dungannon, because when the pandemic came along, my goalkeeping school got closed down. Everything was closed down apart from the Irish League. So I was falling back into a hole again. Didn't know what to do. And me and the wife spoke, which we never spoke before. I had these problems. And we spoke together about things. And she said, you'd be safer coming back and playing football again. Get out twice a week and play on a Saturday. Everybody's got different problems. And my problem was, I'm an outside person. I always wanted to play football and I wanted to coach. And when you get that taken away from you, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I've said this many times. We sort of lose our identity a little bit. And, you know, I'd certainly lost my identity a little bit after my football career. I mean, I've never had an issue with drink or drugs or anything like that. But, you know, it falls into the addiction nature. What is really interesting for me is why we become even more self-destructive. You said to us just then, you know, you sort of chase to try and find that, you know, to go to a pub or a drink or whatever it is. What is it that's in you that's making you know that it's actually, if I go to this pub, it's going to be a problem for me, but actually you can't stop from going? It's affecting so much. Is it because you're depressed? Is it because you are feeling, you know, alone with your thoughts? Like you say, you'll do that and then you'll go to the training ground, which I've done many, many days, and just pretend like everything's great in my life. I've always wanted to ask this question. I sometimes can't answer it myself. Like, why do we become even more self-destructive?
Depression was the massive thing for me. I wanted to forget about things.
Same.
I wanted to forget about things and I had to take something. So I went to a pub and take about 10 pints, 15 pints, and then go on somewhere else and move on somewhere else and maybe 2 or 3 day binging. And you forget about it and you wake up the next day and it's 100 times worse. So my body was getting used to the drink, and that was the problem with me. The body was getting used to the drink and I was relying on the drink to live my life. Once something takes over your body, like alcohol did to me, you just think in your own head you need it to get through the day. And I remember when I was really bad, when I was by myself, I would have had a glass of vodka lying on the bed for me to wake up to drink before I got out to go to work. And that's when things were getting really bad. But I didn't even have work. I had nothing for 9 months, and that's when that started happening. So it was 24/7 I was probably drinking. That's why in them 9 months, I said early on, I could end up dying because my organs would have given up or whatever. But something did stop me from going on. When I woke up that day in Canary Wharf in the apartment, something did tell me to stop it, and it just clicked. And that was my last day I stopped drinking. But going back to the rehab, I remember the day when I was in rehab, we were allowed to go out for an hour with people looking after us. And I remember people was walking the other side of the road, and I was thinking, why are you going across the road? These two or three people couldn't walk past the bar because it scared them to go near the bar because they would have went in. And 2 years later, that was me. I was going in the bar and I was struggling to stay out of the bar. And yes, that's what stuck in my mind now, what's been happening in my life. I go in the bars now. I go with my wife and my family and my friends. And I don't even care about the drink. The first 3 or 4 years, it was very, very difficult for me coming back home to the UK because it's the culture.
It's your routine, isn't it?
When you're in a dressing room and you're larger than life character, I used to get that. You know, I drank a bit and it was like, oh, Harmy's a good, you know, good lad, good drinker, and oh, we'll go out. And you sometimes, because you are pigeonholed into this larger than life, good lad character, always up for a crack, always up for a good night out, you sometimes feel as though, well, I have to stand up to that, even though I don't fancy it. And I found I got myself into that at the back end of my career. It was like, whenever the young lads wanted to go out, oh, Harmy will be always up for a good night out and a good drink and a good crack. And sometimes you couldn't be bothered, but I felt as though sometimes I had to keep up with the sort of image of that.
Yeah. Steve, I hit the nail on the head there. I remember the boys used to ring me up. I was always the first out and the last leave. Remember the times when I wasn't going to go out and they ring me up or text me and I would have had an argument with the wife to get out of the house. It is embarrassing talking about it, like, but it's not the life what you see superstars do in the World Cup and all that. They do go through problems in their life. But when I was growing up as a footballer, people said, why do you not come out and talk about it? It was my job. It was my income. I had to feed the family. And I didn't want to tell anybody what I was going through. And being the man of the house, and you should be tough. Sometimes footballers need a bit of help behind the scenes as well, but you don't want to come speak to the manager or the coaches or anybody at the club, because jeopardize. They might let your contract run out and you're not getting a new contract.
I remember 2004-05, I go to South Africa, the number one ranked bowler in the world, and for 3 weeks leading into the first test match, every night I was crying my eyes out. No idea what was wrong with me. Obviously, I was diagnosed with depression. And I'm like, I can't tell the coach. I can't tell my teammates. You know, I had one person in that dressing room, Andrew Flintoff, who I was close to. He knew what was going on. Physio had an idea what was going on. But I had no idea what was wrong with me, really. And I'm like, if I come out and tell the coach, or if I come out and tell my teammates, I have got depression, I won't play in the first test. And I'll probably be on the next plane home. And I will end my career, even ranked at number one bowler in the world. But depression at that time, the stigma that was with that, it wasn't classed as an illness, it was classed as a weakness. And if I walk in to the coach and say, I have got depression, I would never play cricket again.
Yeah, it's difficult. You look how many people come out and speak about it after they've retired from football or any sports, they come out and talk about it. But that's been happening for a long, long time. Mm. I was at Nottingham Forest before the pandemic, just seeing a few players, and the coach invited me over. They're getting a lot of help now, but deep, deep down, these young players, these senior players still need help. Even if they can bring somebody up and speak to them, you know what I mean? We're doing a lot of work about mental health in Northern Ireland, but there's still a lot of problems, especially with the pandemic as well. People don't want to talk about the problems. They're too scared, and some people, it's too late for them to talk about it 10, 15 years down the line, and it does scare me a lot.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
After the lights go out, Leon McKenzie and Steve Harmison in conversation with Roy Carroll on Talk Sport.
So Roy, your last game for Manchester United was in an FA Cup.
2005.
Arsenal. Can you tell us a little bit about that game, please?
We lost in penalties. Didn't save one penalty. We lost, left five goals in. But during the game, we should have won in the first, in the 90 minutes. We were all over Arsenal at the time. And I remember coming off and for the extra time. So Alex came up to me and said, I'm going to put Tim Howard in for the penalty shootout. So we're going to pull you off just before the full time and extra time. So that was okay, no problem. Tim Howard's a good shot stopper, very good at penalty saves. And it was nearly over, the game was nearly over. I kept looking over, seeing when I'm going to come off. The referee blew the whistle, walked over. So Alex turned around and said, oh, geez, I forgot to take you off. Not in them words, there was a few other words in there as well. Don't want to say it online, but there was a few other words. So I had to go on goals for the penalty shootout. And the first thing he said to me, make sure you stand up for the penalties, because they kicked them down the middle of the goals. Mm. So that was all right. Went in, dived to my right, dived to my left, whatever sides they were. Mm. And only one player went down the middle. And we lost the game. So Alex, after the game, I told you to stand up. But I said, Patrick Vieira's last penalty was down my right side and nearly saved it. And horrible game to lose, especially when you're all over them in the first in the 90 minutes. And to finish your career at Manchester United then was a very difficult one to take.
With that being your last game, do you feel that if you had stayed at Manchester United, your path would have been different?
It could be.
And the reason I ask that question is just because, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson is, you know, a very respected manager in terms of how he operates. There are some real big stars in Manchester United, and maybe just the surroundings and maybe from a protection point of view might have been a little bit different. That's why I asked the question for you.
No, that's a good question. I could have. You never know in life, do you? My decision was, so Alex offered me a new contract in January that year.
2005.
2005, offered me a four-year contract, but he's so truthful. He's a manager which I respect. He said, we're going to bring a top-class goalkeeper in. He said, it's up to you. You might not play as many games. January this was, and he played me for the rest of the season. Not too many managers out there would keep me on the pitch if I said no. But I went away, he told me to have a couple of days to think about it. Went away, spoke to a few senior players. I remember clearly, not saying any names, but I spoke to one senior player and I said to him, I've offered me a four-year contract. I'm not going to play many games. And the first thing he said, what did you want to do when you were a young boy? And I said, I want to play football. And he says, Roy, you've answered your own question. It's up to you what you want to do. You can stay or you can go and play football somewhere else. And I was quite lucky I had West Ham who was interested in me at the time. So that decision to move on, to go to West Ham, that's what made me move on. I wanted to play football. If I stayed at Manchester United, who knows what would have happened. It was a good, stable club. I enjoyed my time there, 4 years playing for Manchester United. But the 3 years before that, last year I was there, I didn't really play many games. I played most of the games my last year at United. And for me, I'd rather look back and say I've played 700, 800 games in my career instead of sitting on the bench or sitting in the stands. I'm winning trophies sitting in the stands. It's not me. I want to play football.
Yeah, and Roy, talk us about your time at Manchester United, because you won the Premier League in 2002-03, FA Cup in 2003-04, and you played a fair amount of games in that time. There were some unbelievable players. I know you've mentioned Sir Alex, an unbelievable manager and a man, but there were some fantastic players in that dressing room, and you know, the likes of Roy Keane. What was it like to play with the likes of Roy Keane? Because I can imagine that being difficult conversations, a Northern Irishman and a Republic of Irishman.
It wasn't too bad. But it was nervous. I've been playing 6 years in the lower leagues. I played for Hull City, moved over in 95, played for Hull City. Then I moved to Wigan in 97 and in League Two. And moving from Wigan to Manchester United, it's a big, big step for me. I was 23 years old, and I remember clearly when I was waiting, I signed a contract 3 weeks till pre-season, signed the contract, and for the 3 weeks I was waiting, I couldn't even sleep. I was very nervous, didn't know what to say to these superstars going into training one morning. So what I did, first day back, I thought it'd be very early, so I got there for 9 o'clock in the morning, but everybody else was in.
Really?
These players, they were so dedicated to be playing at the top level. The first person came over to me was David Beckham, and I just sat there with my mouth wide open. He says, hi, I'm David Beckham. And I just looked at him. I didn't even say my name. I was just thinking, I know who you are. And I was just so nervous. But see, at the end of the session, I went home and I just thought, said to my wife, that's unbelievable. I just felt I'd been there for years and years.
Did he actually put Beckham on the end of David?
Yeah, he did.
Did he really?
He did. This guy's a superstar.
He wasn't a bad-looking lad at the time, was he?
No, what a guy. Everybody was brilliant to me, and it just made me feel so welcome, and I just thought I was there for years and years, and that's what made me feel so welcome, and I just bedded myself really well at Manchester United. But the other one was when you're training, the winning mentality, they're just playing the 7-7, like, if you were in the Roy Keane's side.
Right, this is what I was going to just come to.
Were you?
Roy Keane. This is what I was going to come to, because this man fascinates me, but I've seen it because obviously I've played against him.
Yeah.
But talk to us about the training ground situations, because I know there's some winning mentalities in there. You can't be giving the ball away and things like that. So tell us a little bit about what goes on in training, especially with someone like Roy Keane on your side. Did you get on with him?
Yeah,
what are the stories?
I did learn a lot from Roy. I learned a lot from all the players and the coaching staff, not just winning games. The winning mentality you had to have when you walk through them doors at Carrington into the training ground. When you lose, you know you've lost if you're in Roy's team. And
elaborate. Yeah. You can't leave it there. No. Elaborate.
And I've seen it many times. Like, so I was always trying to get in somebody else's team, but no. This, everybody, even the boxes, we used to do a warm up in the boxes. Just thought you'd pass the ball around, keep it off the two in the middle. Oh my word! The two players in the middle of the box, it was flying, tackles flying everywhere. Players are just going in left, right, and centre. But the ball was passing really quickly. That woke my eyes up and said, "This is what top football's all about."
Levels.
And I played in the lowest leagues in England for 6 years. And when I went to Manchester United, I thought that was it. Finished. 12 o'clock, 12:30. Finished off the training ground. Players are staying out afterwards doing their own work on the pitch. I've never seen that before. I might have seen it from a few young players in at Hull City and Wigan, but not 6, 7, 10, 11 players. Like David Beckham wanted me to stay behind, take free kicks. I thought when he left, I thought, oh, brilliant, bit of rest. And Ronaldo came in and he wanted to do the same thing. Mm. It was amazing. It opened my eyes how hard you had to train to succeed, to win games on a match day. And anybody who played with me after Manchester United, they know that, because for me, I hate losing. I thought I hated losing until I went to Manchester United. It was even worse when you did lose there, because everybody wanted to beat us.
You left Manchester United and you decided not to take up that 4-year contract. And yeah, Leon posed a question a second ago about whether that was the right or the wrong decision. But you went to West Ham and we've talked about the troubles that you had. West Ham was an interesting choice. Things weren't going as well for you there. Just talk to us about the period during that time and the difference between being at Manchester United and being at West Ham.
Being at West Ham, I know I went through a bad time after 6 months because of my back, but see, coming up to that period, I was playing week in, week out. West Ham got promoted. We did quite well that first season we were there. I was there. The fans were brilliant. The stadium, Upton Park, what a stadium that was to walk out in. It was unbelievable fans there. I really enjoyed it, my time at West Ham, until the serious stuff happened to me off the pitch. I have nothing against the West Ham football or the supporters, because I loved it until the stuff off the field happened to me with the depression and the injury. But that's football. I was saying to someone there the other day, I said, things happen for a reason, and that reason happened to me, and it made me the person I am today. And if that never happened, I don't know what it would be like today. You know what I mean? It's things out of my control. Like, when I get that injury, back injury, there's nothing I can do. But I could have been a lot mentally stronger if I understood what was going to happen to me. What I'm doing now in Northern Ireland, I'm helping young players trying to become professional footballers. But I do tell them to try and get something else outside football to focus on if you do get injured. Mm. Because that was my problem. I never focused on anything else apart from football.
Yeah, same with me. And I was like very young at Crystal Palace when I'd done my first major career-threatening injury to my knee, which I ended up having sort of 3 operations on as career went on. But that injury changed everything for me from a psychological point of view. And now we can't control what's happening with our body. Now we can't actually do what we love. It puts us into some real vulnerable positions. And I think back when we were sort of playing properly or competing, shall I say, it just wasn't a known thing to really be talking about. You know, but we just couldn't have those conversations. And that's why it's so important, like, to have you on the show now.
That's the biggest thing I've went through. I think a lot of people out there probably listen to this and say, oh, it's just an injury.
It's not.
It's just an injury, but it's not. Every sports person goes through it. Like, you'd be lucky to go through your career without an injury. Mm. I had a few injuries, broken fingers. I was out for a few weeks, maybe a month. But being out for so long, 9-10 months, it did take a lot out of me. Mm. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, can I bring things into the football in or sports in Northern Ireland to give young kids the opportunity to deal with this problem if it does arise in your career? Mm. Because you could be the best sports person in the world, but if you get that bad injury, you could go down a dark road like I did. For me, it's like always something good to do outside football. And I remember when I retired, and a lot of people do talk like, why do you not go back to university, do things in college or do things? I said, no, all I wanted to do, focus, was playing football. Mm-hmm. Steve said it early on about me, when were you focusing on becoming a coach? I didn't focus until I finished football, because all I wanted to do was focus on playing football.
Yeah, same.
If something else put me off,
yeah,
and I have a bad game, I would have kicked myself, you know what I mean? Mm. So I always focus. My job was to try and keep clean sheets, win the game for your team. And that's all I was focusing on. I never focused on anything else. But football now and sports, I don't know what it's like, Steve, in cricket, but a lot of people are doing different things now. They're managers, coaching badges, or all different physios and stuff like that there. But when I was growing up, no. All we wanted to do was being a footballer.
There's two things that I want to ask Roy, and that is, you left West Ham after a time of trouble. You had a period where you really struggled. The interesting bit for me was you saying, my wife found out I was off the drink. She invited me back into the house to talk. How important was that conversation, and then taking the conversation from the Greek agent and then moving everybody back? Did you feel as though you got your life back?
Yeah, that's the period when I went back to my wife at hands and knees. And first of all, she didn't let me come back. That's what it was. I used to live a place around Essex. Everybody knew everybody. And I was off the drink for nearly over a month. I think it was over a month. And she heard, and she brought me back. And that's how we got back together again. And the phone call, it was weird when I got back to the wife. Phone call, it was probably 10 days later from the Greek agent. And I just asked my wife, do you fancy going out to Greece? Because they were inviting me out for a week to have a look around and stuff. So we end up going to Greece together as a family. And we just decided, no, we're not coming back to the UK. We're going to stay in Greece. And I said, right, we're signing contract here. My wife and my kids went back. My wife sorted everything because I was still in a bad way at this stage. Mm. I was struggling. And I remember when my wife and kids went back, and I was sitting around the pool at the hotel thinking that I'll be all right now, I'm okay, I'll be in a good place. And I said, no, Roy, you're not drinking, not taking it anymore, I'm off it. And that was it.
Roy, looking at life today, very much involved in coaching work for the Irish FA as their goalkeeping development coach. And you've been involved recently with the Northern Ireland national team. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, Jared Little was the under 17 and under 19 manager. And he asked me to come in and do the goalkeepers about 2 years ago. And I jumped at the chance to come in and do it. Steve Harper was the goalkeeping coach in the first team, and he ended up moving back to Newcastle to the academy. I think he's doing the director of the academy up in Newcastle. What a great guy. I spoke to him a few times, and it was great to get his experience as a goalkeeping coach and end up becoming the first team goalkeeping coach when he left. And it was an honour being a goalkeeping coach of Northern Ireland after being involved in the playing career so many years. And then they gave me a full-time role as a two-year contract to become the goalkeeping development coach of goalkeepers. It's a great honour for me again to work the whole youth setup up to the first team and develop these young keepers to try and get them in the first team.
Well, you was a goalkeeping coach at Nottingham Forest for one day.
I was at Nottingham Forest. I know the president, I know the people there because of Olympiacos. Mm. And they asked me to come in for the end of the season.
So that was around lockdown. So it was. How did that affect you, the lockdown? Because it affected a lot of people.
That's the thing. When I went to Forest, we didn't know what was going on. We had one training session. It was brilliant to be in a Forest. The training pitch was excellent. Everything was lovely. I was loving every minute of it. And then everything got closed down. Went back home, and my goalkeeping schools got closed down again as well. So everything was closed down. It was difficult at that time, but it was a good experience. And when I was at Forest, I learned a lot outside the game as well, because there was a lady there who looks after the academy players. I remember being in Hull City when I was told my mates used to go in at the end of the season, your teammates, and players coming out crying, and other players coming, yes, I've got a two-year contract, professional. Yeah. Now this day and age, players have told, and they have help to speak out about where they're going to go forward after this. But back in my day as a YTS, back in the day, it was you got two ways through the front door, back in the changing rooms, and nobody else come near you. And yeah, it was hard. But yeah, it was some experience being there for one day. I wish I was there a bit longer, but the pandemic came along. Mm. Good football club, great academy, really good setup, academy people. A lot of good players come out of the academy system over there as well.
How did the pandemic affect you personally?
Yeah, it affected me big time, and that's why I came back to play for Dungannon. Played for Dungannon for 3 months to get out of the house and training twice a week and playing on a Saturday. In Northern Ireland, the Premiership up over there, the part-time teams only train Tuesdays and Thursdays and playing Saturday. So it affected me quite a bit because, like I said, I'm an outside person. I love coaching, I love playing football, and I like being outside. And when you get locked up 23 hours a day.
You can feel trapped.
It's not nice. You feel trapped.
Yeah. And Roy, what you like now? We've talked about the alcohol. I'm assuming that's gone. Talk about depression. Where you at with that? You've got your own coaching school, RC1. How's that going after lockdown?
Yeah, I'm still a madman, like, but apart from that there, it's going great at the moment. But each day you take each day as it comes, because you know one day something's going to happen. You have to be prepared for that. And I do still fight the depression, not as much as I did do, but I can handle it a lot more. I know what my body can do. I know what I'm doing in my own head. I think that's because of the alcohol. I've been off the alcohol for that long, and I'm very clear. I've got a great focus what I'm going to do in the future.
And the coaching school?
Yes, my own goalkeeping school is going really well. I've got 25 young goalkeepers. We do 4-week blocks every Sunday. We have one Sunday off. We do that 8 times during the year. And a lot of them young keepers, I lost quite a few as well because of the pandemic. The poor kids never came back out. It caused a lot of problems, this lockdown. I'm not saying if it was right or wrong, but it did cause a lot of problems to young people. My daughter struggled with it as well.
Yeah.
It's not easy for anybody, but everything's going well for me. The coaching, my own goalkeeping school is doing excellent. I really enjoy it and love seeing the kids smiling and enjoying life on the training pitch.
Roy, we've spoken about how moving to Greece was a big turning point in your life, but let's look at the time on the pitch, which was a big success for you at Olympiakos.
First of all, it was at Offie in Crete. Yeah.
Talk me through it. Offie
and Olympiakos.
Then Olympiakos. But the Olympiakos debut was special.
Yeah, it was very cold. It was very cold. It was very cold. It was -13 in Moscow.
Really?
Yeah. And the game was changed from night to during the day. That was during the day as well.
Mm. But talk to me about the penalty save.
Yeah.
Because that's a wonderful way to start, right?
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant way to start playing for Olympiakos.
Wife and kids there?
Not in Moscow. It was too cold.
Too cold.
Okay. They were in Athens when it was 24 degrees.
And I
was
like, nice. That's a bit better. That makes more sense. Yeah.
There's things you will do for your wife, your husband, but not that.
She might not have come if you would have said that first.
So you can see it clearly there. The player got a ball played through. It was the keeper was coming out, and the player just got there before the keeper, and he took him down. And it was that cold, I had doctor's gloves underneath my match gloves because it was that cold, couldn't feel my fingers. I think I had 2 or 3 tracksuit buttons on. I had about 4 jackets on and 3 jumpers. When the referee put that red card up, it took me 7 minutes to get all my kit off to go on the pitch. And I remember standing there clearly, and there's a video of me standing there. I was shaking. Remember Bruce Goblin, the European Cup, when he was shaking his legs?
Yeah, yeah.
Someone thought I was doing the Bruce Goblin thing. No, it wasn't. It was just because it was that cold. And lucky enough, I fell over the right way, dived to my left and fell over and saved it. Basically, the fans, it's just fantastic to me. They would call me a legend playing for Olympiakos. The second game I played in the Europa League, it was 1-0. We ended up winning it 1-0, but I played the last 25 minutes with another pulled hamstring.
Mm.
And we had a young keeper in goal on the bench. And I looked over, the manager said, "You stay on the pitch." And I played on for 25 minutes and I did really well, made a few saves with one leg. Yeah. And then after that game, the fans just took me. I went back over there in 2014 when I played for Northern Ireland.
Really?
Yeah, the fans were still turning up to watch, say hello to me. And
what's the difference in terms of, like, you see, like, the fans here to then you go to somewhere like that? What's the atmosphere like?
I remember when we played Panathinaikos, my first derby at Olympiakos was away at Panathinaikos, and there was no away fans allowed. There was all Panathinaikos fans. There was 60,000 Panathinaikos fans. And the noise was unbelievable. Crazy. They had a running track around it.
Mm.
The goalkeeping coach said to me, "Keep your head down. They keep your head down." I said, "What's he on about?" I walked on the pitch. The fans were way back there. Next minute, there was flying everywhere. The fireworks flying past us and everything.
So that's what he meant.
That's what he meant. Keep your head down. So every time you're trying to catch a ball, you're trying to flip and dodge the fireworks coming on the pitch as well. But I did really enjoy it. I remember going back there with the Northern Ireland team when we played Greece.
Mm.
People still coming up to me, speaking to me. And it's great to see. I call it my second home. The people did look after me out there, and I really enjoyed every minute of it, and of course the weather was nice as well.
Did you feel as though you were comfortable going? Because you didn't start at Olympiakos. You got to move from a smaller
offer,
going to Olympiakos. Was that like going, you know, Wigan to Manchester United, if you want to talk about English terms.
I'm not disrespecting Offaly, like, because the fans were brilliant to me out there for 6 months. I worked hard for them. The Greek people will appreciate what you do if you give 100% on the pitch and off the pitch. And even Offaly could see that, yes. But going to Olympiacos, that was the next level. I started playing back in the Champions League again and sometimes in the Europa League. And I won a Greek league over there, and I won two Greek cups as well. So it's a big step up for Olympiacos. And I always said it was a mini Man U outside UK. Great facilities. The owner was really good to me. And it was a fantastic setup and a lot of good people in both clubs.
So what's the future hold for Roy?
Future for me is to work as hard as I can to get the next Northern Ireland keeper to play for the country.
That's your ambition?
That's my ambition. A young keeper coming up and growing up in Northern Ireland to play for, it's like myself when I was growing up, Pat Jennings, what a legend. And that's my ambition, is to get the next goalkeeper to play for Northern Ireland, first team.
Wow. And are you doing something to do with a team in Ireland with mental health?
I did do, it was called FC Minewell. Me and Keith Gillespie, great guy. Me and him joined this club that's just started opening this club in Northern Ireland. And it was all for men who had problems off the pitch, ex-players, no matter what league they played in. Really enjoyed it with them, good fun. Spoke about my problems to them. They thought, geez, there was nothing wrong with me. Spoke to them, they listened to me on my broadcasts and stuff like that there. And they says, well, I can't believe the life you had. And I said, I know, sometimes I wake up and just pinch myself and I can't believe it myself, but people just want to hear people like myself who's played in a high level open up what I've went through, and hopefully can help, because Northern Ireland's a very serious place. When I went back, there was a lot of suicides, and
I've heard,
it scared me, and I hope I can help a small bit out to help them people to get over it.
And Roy, talk to us about Northern Ireland. You mentioned Dizzy there. I know Keith Gillespie, you know, very well. We go to Portugal, you know, a couple of times a year playing golf, and he's a great fella. I love him to bits. He's just so infectious as a character and as a person. Representing Northern Ireland 45 times. What was it like to represent your country like that?
I was involved in the Northern Ireland setup when I was 18, but I never played until I was 19 in Thailand, and I only played half a game. And see, I walked off that pitch saying, if that was my last game, I loved every minute of it. And I was lucky enough to get 45 caps. I missed 5 years of my international football career because of the problems off the field. And to get 45 caps, and I'd done a podcast quite a while ago, and I was saying when I was sitting on the bench, and I was crying on the bench when we lost against Wales. It was a big thing after what I've went through and what I put my family through. It was a hard, hard life that I've went through for my wife and myself and my kids and my family. And I was crying on the bench, not just for the football. It was what we've went through. Mm-hmm. And I never thought I'd be sitting in a major tournament in France in 2016 after what my body went through and stuff. It's a story that I love to get out, and I want people to understand life isn't easy at the top. And there's a lot of players that do drop very quickly. And I did drop, and I got back on the horse and jumped back up, and I played in the highest level again. Michael O'Neill called me back in 2012, I think it was. And I got most of my caps probably in them 4 years with Michael O'Neill than I did before.
And in 2016, was that the highlight? Going to France. You played 5 out of 10 qualifying games. You got to France, and the Euros were, it was a major tournament.
I know you might laugh at me here, but my major thing was playing my first game for Northern Ireland. I know it was only a friendly, but that was massive for me at 19 years old to play for your country. Yes, the 2016 was a great highlight for me, but my biggest highlight playing for Northern Ireland was making that debut.
For me, to listen to your openness and what you want to give back in terms of what you've experienced, I totally understand. As I do a little bit of mentoring now for Crystal Palace under-18s, mentoring sounds like you're kind of in that direction, but would you ever go into management?
I am changing. I've calmed down a lot, actually, since I've been playing. I think football has changed so much. It's changed so much. I remember back in the day when I was playing through at Wigan, even Sir Alex Ferguson shouting at you and stuff like that there. Pull your sleeves up and get on with it. This day and age, I'm nothing against the players. It's just the way we are in life.
Yeah.
So for me, yes, I probably love to become a manager. but not. I have a lot to do. I have to learn the game a lot more.
Would that be back home, do you think, or maybe here?
Anywhere. You know what I mean? I've been everywhere. I've played in Denmark. I've played in Greece. Played in all the leagues in England. I loved every place I've been to.
So you've heard it here first.
It's been fascinating to hear your story. I speak on behalf of Leon here when we say a massive thank you for not only your honesty, your openness to tell the world, for me, what a great bloke Roy Carroll is.
Thank you so much, Roy. Appreciate it.
Cheers, guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.